Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Coming up in just a bit, we'll talk about Super Bowl ticket prices. I just got an email, and some of us know people that have bought tickets to the Super Bowl. I want to figure out what bank they robbed, because it is pricey to go to the bowl. Coming up in about 30 minutes, we'll be joined by Warren Moon. The Hall of Famer Warren Moon will join us on the show coming up in a bit. On Sunday, we will see the first Super Bowl that has two black quarterbacks going head-to-head. We'll talk to Warren Moon about that here coming up in just a bit. Now, Rob, I want you to tell me if you think that this comparison is out of bounds. And if it is, correct me. Now, I don't know if this opinion could be as out of bounds as the opinions I've heard you give over the last few days.
I think Philadelphia's like the only city in the world that's claim to fame food you could argue is better than KC barbecue.
Whoa.
Could argue.
But I was thinking about this earlier today. So I was going over the four storylines that I think are the most interesting heading into this game. A, what's the injury updates on all the individual players? Jalen Hurts had the shoulder that bothered him at the end of the season. Patrick Mahomes, high ankle sprain. We'll see what's up with L'Jarius Sneed, Willie Gay Jr., the Chiefs wide receivers. There's a lot of injury updates that we'll get here over the course of the next few days as we get ready for Super Bowl 57. Andy Reid going up against his former team, the Kelce Bowl. This is the first Super Bowl with two black quarterbacks. There's a lot of fun storylines in this game. I was thinking a lot about Andy Reid's time at Philadelphia, and this is the comparison that I've come up with. Andy Reid's time at Philadelphia is almost the exact same as Roy Williams' time at Kansas. No one would ever say that Roy Williams' time at Kansas wasn't successful. He was incredible at Kansas. Final Fours, Big 12 championships, pros, excitement. Roy Williams did everything that you could do at Kansas. Except one thing. Roy Williams then leaves, has more success at his second stop than his first stop. And the school that he left also won national championships after he left. Is that not the exact same as Andy Reid? Andy Reid had an incredible run in Philadelphia. Four straight NFC championship games. Really successful time in Philadelphia. Really successful. They went 130-93 while he was there. A Super Bowl appearance, five NFC championship games, Hall of Famers, one of the best organizations in the NFL. Fast forward, well, Doug Peterson won a Super Bowl there. Nick Sirianni has them back in the Super Bowl and as Super Bowl favorites coming up on Sunday. Is it not the Kansas basketball story? Roy Williams was amazing at Kansas. He won 80% of his games and 78% of his games in the Big 8 and Big 12. They went to four Final Fours while he were there. I think you could argue that Roy's best team is better than any team that Self had. That team with Jacque Vaughn and Paul Pierce might be the best Kansas team that never won a ring. Might be the best Kansas team of recent memory that we've seen. But Roy couldn't get over that hump and win the big one. But it took the next coach to do it, and Bill Self. The exact same thing in Philadelphia. Andy Reid is Roy Williams. That comparison hit me earlier today, and I wanted to run it by you because you're a KU guy. You've got a KU hoodie on today. You're going to the game later tonight to watch them win. I mean, potentially lose to Texas.
I mean, I love this analogy. It really is good. Now, there's some intricacies and little things about it that I think fall apart, but we're not going to delve too deep into it. We're not going to get really into the nitty-gritty. It's a fantastic analogy. Philadelphia loves Andy Reid. KU fans love Roy Williams. You did everything but one thing for us, and we love you for it. And the next guy did the thing, so we're not hurt by you failing to do anymore. Andy Reid, before his five straight AFC championship in Kansas City, had the record for four straight in Philadelphia. He was doing things that are unprecedented. He got T.O. and Donovan McNabb to be friends. Unprecedented behavior. But time wore on, and Philly fans love him more now because he got his and they've gotten theirs. Now, one of the reasons I don't think it's a perfect analogy is because Bill Self took over for Roy Williams and has hit the ground running and become one of the best coaches, if not the best coach in college basketball. The Eagles hired Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly never was that guy. Then they hired Doug Peterson, who won a Super Bowl, but was eventually canned. And Nick Sirianni appears to be that guy, but they fired their last Super Bowl winning coach. Let's just see. So that part of the analogy kind of falls apart, but the Reid is Roy is a phenomenal comparison.
Do we think that Nick Sirianni is a great coach? Because if you just like look at Nick Sirianni and what he's been able to accomplish this early on in his career, Nick Sirianni is 41 years old and has had nothing really but success. I mean, I don't think last year's Eagles team was that good. They went 9-8 and went to the playoffs last year. And this year they turn around and they're 14-3. He's 23-11. As the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles and has got them to the Super Bowl, and we'll see if he wins the Super Bowl. It seems like Nick Sirianni should be talked about more as being a prodigy, so to speak, like one of the young whiz kids. Like that's the new thing in the NFL, right? The new thing in the NFL is to hire a young, late 30-something, early 40-something-year-old quarterback or head coach and see what happens. I mean, that's what Zach Taylor is. That's what Matt LaFleur is. That's what Sean McVay was. I mean, I don't think we talk about Nick Sirianni like he's Sean McVay. We don't talk about him like he's Zach Taylor. We don't talk about him like he's Matt LaFleur, which is odd for a coach that is in a major market like Philadelphia that's always playing nationally televised games and one that has had the success that he's had in just two seasons, 23-11, and they're 60 minutes away from winning a Super Bowl. I don't think Sirianni gets talked about like he's one of the top coaches in the league, despite having a resume of one of the top coaches in the league.
What's funny was earlier today, we were prepping this show, and you asked me, hey, is Nick Sirianni a great coach? And I couldn't answer fast enough. Nope, not great. And then I caught myself and I started thinking about it because you laid it out perfectly. His resume reads of that of a great coach. Year two Super Bowl, maximizing his quarterback, which one of the reasons Doug Peterson eventually got canned is that Jalen Hurts was not sensational under Doug Peterson. He looked like that first year Bama Jalen Hurts, replaced by Tua Jalen Hurts. That's what Doug Peterson had. This guy was an MVP candidate. Before that, when he was in Indianapolis, he had that offense humming. He and Frank Reich had Jacoby Brissett and people of that ilk looking good. And now he's on the playoffs in 2 years, and you're right, with a team that wasn't very good last year, he went to the playoffs. Had no business being in the playoffs, benefited from the 7th seed, but got in. I don't understand why I think no, because his resume tells me it should be yes, but there's something about Nick Sirianni, maybe it's his opening press conference with the rock, paper, scissors comments or whatever, that just has me not sold, but his resume reads like a great coach. But maybe I'm just being like Julian Love and I'm being a hater.
Text line 913-586-7610. Nope. Roy left Kansas basketball in the gutter. Just because we picked ourselves out of it doesn't mean now I'm okay with Roy. What in the world is this person talking about? Wasn't Roy's last game in the national championship game? I'm not forgetting that, right? Didn't the last game Roy coached, didn't he leave after the national title? That's the gutter. You want to know who leaves a program in the gutter? Kim Anderson. You want to know who left the program in the gutter? Konzo Martin. Bruce Weber. Nah, KU fans, we don't feel sorry for you that Roy Williams left for North Carolina and then you hired Bill Self. I know it might have took 1 or 2 years, but that is not the gutter. Let's not do this.
And listen, I know I'm a KU fan and I played the role on this show, but The talent he left at Kansas included first-team All-American and consensus All-American Wayne Simmons.
Like, yeah, what do you think the gutter? What's going on here?
Aaron Miles, Michael Lee, Wayne Simmons, Keith Langford. Not a group you can win with.
KU fans, weird, man. I try to tell you this all the time. I try to tell you that KU fans are weird, and you never listen to me. You never believe me. You don't pay attention. You don't be listening to me. KU fans are weird. Roy left us in the gutter. But you know what? I hope Dennis Gates leaves Missouri basketball the same way. I hope he leaves them as down and destitute as Kansas was whenever Roy Williams decided to take the North Carolina job. But no, that analogy hit me earlier today, that Andy Reid and Roy Williams are basically the same individual. Coming up on the other side, some of us know people who have spent a lot of money to go to the Super Bowl. We'll talk about it. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison, brought to you by the DePasquale Moore Law Firm. Remember, Mike's got this on your official broadcast partner of the Chiefs and the home for Royals baseball, 610 Sports Radio.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app.
Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll be joined by Warren Moon, the Hall of Famer, will join us on the show here coming up in just a bit. Rob, do you have a dream of going to the Super Bowl? Because I've been to Super Bowl Media Week a couple of times, and I didn't really have much of a desire to go to the game. I enjoyed kind of all the things around the Super Bowl, but I actually wanted to go to the Super Bowl. I think it's going to be a really, really fun, really competitive game, and you know how much I love Phoenix. Phoenix might be my favorite city in the United States. That is not Kansas City, Missouri. I love that place. I wanted to go to the game. Unfortunately, we couldn't go. We're here, but I wanted to go. Do you have a dream of going to the Super Bowl? Is that something on your sports bucket list? Is that something you feel like you have to check off?
When I was younger, I felt that way, but as time has marched on, I felt less and less invested in that personally. I mean, now this one I would like to go to because the game is great, and Miami I wanted to go to because Miami, but generally speaking, if I go, cool, I'll be really happy. I'll have a great time. I'm not going to talk bad about it. But in a situation where if I don't go, I'm not going to be like, oh, man, I really missed out on this moment. That's kind of how I'm out about the Super Bowl.
So I got an email earlier today from Game Time. I would highly encourage you to download the Game Time app. And it was kind of trends, you know, of how people are spending their money for the Super Bowl if you plan on going. So the get-in price, this is to have the worst ticket in the building, but you can say that you went to the Super Bowl. Rob, it's $4,300. $4,300 just for get-in tickets for the game. Just to be up in 342 row ZZ. You got the Jordan Love legacy seats at the Super Bowl, but you can say you were there. Now, I understand some people have a lot more money than other people. If you got $10,000 to spare, because you know they got to tack in fees, you know what I mean? You're going to pay the fees. So you're going to maybe spend about $9,500 to go to the game. If you're going to spend all that, you want to know what I'm not doing? Sitting up in the rafters. I'm not sitting up here next to the Taylor Swift banners and the Garth Brooks banners. No, not at all. I'm not sitting up here. No, thank you. If you got that kind of money, I feel like there's a better use of it than sitting way up at the top. That's just me. Now, Rob, the average, this is the average ticket sold right now on the Game Time app. Average, $7,300. $7,300 is the average price of a purchase per ticket right now on the Game Time app. How have we signed up that the Super Bowl is something that's not realistic for fans to be able to attend? A lot of us know somebody that went to the World Series. I went to the World Series. Wasn't rich by any means. I could afford to go to the World Series. If we had an NBA team in town, you would be able to realistically afford going to the NBA Finals. I'm not saying that it would be cheap by any means. But you can get into the NBA Finals if you want. You can get into the Stanley Cup Finals. Hell, at this point, you could go see all 3 days of the Masters for just one Super Bowl ticket. How are we signed up that it's not realistic that you can ever go see your team win a championship in the National Football League? Every other sporting event is manageable. Now, again, I'm not saying it's cheap. If K-State made it to the college football playoff, those tickets wouldn't be cheap. You could afford to go, realistically. Who can afford this? Who can afford the average? The average for two tickets is $15,000 to go to the Super Bowl. The cheapest tickets are around $9,000. Who can afford this? Who can afford this?
And on top of that, for your K-State comparison, if K-State made the college football playoff, you know what they'd have? 3 weeks to prep to get flights and hotels and things booked. Chiefs fans had a week and a half to get ready to get down there. So, you know, flights aren't cheap nowadays. You know, lodging ain't cheap in Arizona. This continues to highlight why I'm happy the NFL didn't have its trial balloon of the AFC Championship game on neutral site, because how the NFL makes its money on neutral site games like the Super Bowl is they sell a ton of tickets to corporate sponsors. And there's nothing wrong with corporate sponsors, whatever. But those corporate sponsors gobble up all the good tickets. So it's a supply-demand factor from there. There's only a low amount of tickets left for you actual fans. Demand is high, so people spike prices. That is why I'm so, so happy that the NFL didn't get its trial balloon in Atlanta between the Chiefs and Bills.
Someone on the text line says, this is the difference in a 7-game series versus 1 game, but the Super Bowl is outrageous, though. No doubt. I mean, the average for the college football championship was $1,500. That's the average. So you could probably get in for, what, $800, $900 a ticket? Again, it's not going to be cheap. It's the championship game. Supply and demand, as you said. It's not going to be cheap. $2,000 to go see your team play for the national championship seems like a reasonable price, something you're willing to spend. You can go see your team play in the Final Four. It's not crazy to go see your team. Rob, you could go see, if KU goes to the national championship game next year, you could afford to go to the national championship game. How could you not afford to go to the NFL version of the national? $15,000? You're right when it comes to the AFC and NFC championship game, that if that became a thing, right now it's so cool because you can go to the game. Now, it was cold outside, but the day of, you can get tickets for the AFC Championship game for what? $125, $140, $150? Now, you're going to be sitting up there. You're sitting pretty. You're sitting up by the lights.
You're going to look down at Jordan Love's family.
Yeah, you're sitting with the potato girl way up there. But you could go for about $300, $400 to see your team have a chance to go to the Super Bowl. They've priced it out where it's not even remotely realistic. If you decide to go watch the Chiefs play in the Super Bowl, you just can't go on another vacation for the rest of the year. That's your vacation for the year. Your vacation for the year is, hey, we're not taking the kids to Disney World. Hey, we're not going to see Grandpa this year for Thanksgiving. We're spending all our income on going to see the Chiefs play the Eagles in the Super Bowl. This is crazy. $15,000 on average for two tickets. I see why that man was robbing banks now. How can you afford this? I see why he was out here with the pistol going by Bixby Credit Union to rob the people. How can you afford on your salary to go to the Super Bowl if it costs that much money? You got to rob somebody.
And he went to the COVID Super Bowl, so they were in less tickets, more.
He did go to the COVID Bowl.
Less supply, more demand.
He did go to the COVID Bowl. You're right. That one don't even count. The COVID Bowl, that don't even count. Man, he robbed a bank to go to the COVID Bowl and they lost? That's the real story. We're not getting the real Chiefsaholic story.
Someone on the text line points out that a friend of his lives in Phoenix. Dumpy hotel rooms. Nothing are costing $1,000 a night. This is a $20,000 weekend for you to watch the Chiefs. That's just an outlandish number to think to yourself, I'd like to see my team win a championship. I got to spend some people's salary.
Yeah, no, that's crazy. You got to Airbnb the crib if you live in Phoenix. You
know what I mean? Make some money, yeah.
I can go stay over somebody else's house for the weekend. You know, I can go stay over somebody else's house. We can't stay here. You see what the Red Roof Inn is going for, honey? You got to tell little Bill here to pack his stuff up. We got to go stay at Grandpa's for the weekend. We can't be in this house. We got to Airbnb this thing for $400 a night if you get that opportunity. You got to.
Make a note, Kansas City fans, because the World Cup will be the same way. Get those Airbnb houses ready.
That's a good point. Do you think the World Cup's going to be that expensive?
Games? No. I just meant like the idea of you can.
Oh, okay. I just didn't know.
I don't. There's too many moving.
I've never bought tickets for a soccer game in my entire life, so
there's way too many variables to answer because it's still 3 years away. But assuming it's not a non-world power and a non-U.S. game, it will be probably similar to just get-ins, 125, 150.
They're not giving us Brazil. I mean, come on now. They're not giving us England.
No. If for some reason you're like, oh, man, Germany's taking on Argentina, it changed.
That's in Dallas. That's in New York. I don't know who we're getting. We're getting Austria. We're not getting none of the premier countries. We're going to get four countries. We're just not going to get the premier countries coming to Kansas City. We already know that's going to be the case. Coming up in about 5 minutes, we'll be joined by Warren Moon, Hall of Fame quarterback. Warren Moon will join us on the show. This is the first Super Bowl where there are two black quarterbacks going head-to-head. We asked Patrick Mahomes about it. Here's what he said.
I am proud, man. We've came a long way, and as I've gotten the NFL and obviously learned more and more about the history of the black quarterback, I'm happy that we're going to be on this stage, and it couldn't be against a better guy, man, and Jalen Hurts, and someone who's done it the right way. I've met a couple of times, just a great dude, and works his tail off, man. And I think you can see that with how his teammates believe in him, and how they've gotten better and better each and every year. And I'm glad that we're going to be able to represent the black quarterback in the biggest game of them all. So it's going to be a great experience, man, and I just hope it's a great football game.
Warren Moon set to join us here coming up in a little bit. We'll get his stories here at the bottom of the hour. So the top story today, at least regarding the Kansas City Chiefs, is that the Chiefs have activated Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and they have made the decision to sit Mecole Hardman down for the Super Bowl. We knew this last week, at least when it comes to Mecole Hardman. For Andy Reid to say this last week regarding his availability told us everything that we needed to know. Here's Andy Reid from last week.
Yeah, so I think it'll be tough for him. I mean, I doubt that he'll make the Super Bowl. But listen, he was not going to be denied the other day, and it's a tribute to the kid. He pushed himself like no other, and he's a tough nut now, man. He's all smiles with you, but he when it comes down to playing, he is a tough, tough kid. You know,
we've got a lot of text over the course of the day about Clyde Edwards-Helaire and what do I think his role is going to be in the game? Do I think he's going to be active? Do I think he's going to get utilized? Clyde Edwards-Helaire hasn't played for the Chiefs in almost 3 months now. Like, almost 3 months. The last time that he took the field for the Chiefs was on November 20th. He was already starting to be phased out of the offense. He had two carries in the Chargers game. He didn't get a carry in the regular season game against the Jacksonville Jaguars. He had four carries in the game against the Tennessee Titans. He got six carries in his final three games with the Chiefs. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is not somebody to talk about for this upcoming game. We can have a conversation about what you think is going to happen this offseason with Clyde Edwards-Helaire and what do they do and are they going to bring him back for next season. But in terms of the game that they're going to play on Sunday, how do you bring in a player that's essentially cold at this point, especially when Isaiah Pacheco has been such a positive for you over the last few months or so? I mean, since they handed things over to Isaiah Pacheco, they have found balance that they haven't had since the really strong Damian Williams days, since they last won the Super Bowl. They got a guy who's averaging 5 yards a carry, a guy who's shown an ability to catch the ball out of the backfield. Pacheco was a really productive pass catcher in the AFC Championship game against Cincinnati. They were using Jerick McKinnon really well the second half of the year, a little bit slow in the postseason. We'll see if they're able to get him back into the offense with the injuries that have happened to wide receiver. I don't think Clyde Edwards-Helaire is a threat or a talking point for this game. Maybe he's active in this game, but I'll set the over-under on Clyde Edwards-Helaire touches at 1.5 and feel really good about the under. Maybe he gets a carry. Ronald Jones got a carry in the Bengals game. He got one carry for 0 yards. That was it. I don't think that Clyde's a player that factors into the present for the Chiefs. I also don't think that he's a player that factors in for the future of the Kansas City Chiefs. I think this offseason he gets traded to a team for a conditional 6th or 7th round pick, and the Chiefs move forward with Isaiah Pacheco, Jerick McKinnon, and probably somebody else that they draft. They've given Clyde Edwards-Helaire all the chances that they're going to give him. I think those chances have run out. So, again, maybe he is active for the Super Bowl. Maybe he sees the field. Maybe he touches the ball one time. I don't think that he's going to be in their offensive game plan at all. I think he is a breaking case of emergency kind of player. We saw the injuries that they just had in the AFC Championship game, and I think they want to be prepared in case something like that happens again in Super Bowl 57. Coming up on the other side, we'll be joined by Warren Moon, the Canadian Football Hall of Famer, the Pro Football Hall of Famer. We'll talk to him about his experiences and this being the first Super Bowl with two black quarterbacks going head-to-head. Warren Moon up next. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
This is The Drive with Carrington Harrison, brought to you by the DePasquale Moore Law Firm. Remember, Mike's got this. If you missed any of the show, catch up on the Odyssey app or at 610sports.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Kansas City, it's George Karloftis, and you're listening to The Drive with Carrington Harrison on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City as we continue to get you ready for Super Bowl 57 between the Chiefs and the Eagles. Our next guest is brought to you by AG Power John Deere. AG Power, experience all that John Deere has to offer at AG Power, and also by Papa Murphy's. Get any medium two-topping pizza for just $6.99 in-store or at papamurphys.com. Earlier today, we were joined by Doug Williams. We were also joined by Cordell Stewart. Very happy right now to be joined by Warren Moon, the Canadian Football Hall of Famer and the Pro Football Hall of Famer to talk about this being the first Super Bowl with two African-American quarterbacks facing each other head-to-head. Our conversation started with what was his thoughts, what was his feeling whenever it was official that Patrick Mahomes would be going up against Jalen Hurts in the Super Bowl.
You know, it just brings, first of all, a smile to my face. You know, I remember watching the Kansas City game, the second game of the championship weekend, and once the game was over, I started thinking, I wonder if this has ever happened before. And then I thought about it, and I'm like, this is the first time this has really ever happened, and we're talking about history right now. So it was something that made me really proud that two African Americans are going to be in the biggest game in all of sports. And they're leading their franchises to this particular milestone. And it is a milestone because it's the first time it's ever happened. So you got to call it history. And hopefully we don't have to talk about this much anymore after this. But it is happening right now for the first time. It's got to be talked about.
I think what's really exciting is these are two very different kind of quarterbacks. You know, there's always that stigma of the run first black quarterback. And then you've got somebody who is such a great pocket passer like Patrick Mahomes. I think that's what's really cool about this matchup is you have two quarterbacks to go about it two very different ways.
Yeah, they both have the ability to make things happen with their legs in different ways. They actually call runs for their quarterback in Philadelphia, where Patrick tends to improvise his runs when he's scrambling outside the pocket, but he does it very well. But, yeah, like you said, he likes to sit in the pocket and throw the football. That's where he's most comfortable. But Jalen Hurts has really made a big strides in that area, too, of sitting in the pocket and throwing the football. I think he has one of the highest completion percentages on deep balls down the field. So he's really worked hard at becoming a better pocket passer. And I think if he continues to keep working the way he has the last few years, he will even get better because he's only 23 years old.
Warren, we've had you on the show before, and normally we're sort of previewing the game, and I do want to get your thoughts on who you think is going to win, but we've never really talked a lot about your career. So you have a tremendous career in college, and you make the decision to go to Canada. What prompted that?
There were teams in the NFL that just didn't want to play me at quarterback. They wanted to switch my position, and I under no circumstances was going to switch my position. I had felt like every step of the way throughout my journey from Pop Warner through high school, junior college, major college, I played at a very high level, and I just felt like I could do it in the NFL if given the opportunity. So if they weren't going to give me the chance to play quarterback in the NFL, I was going to go where they would, and the Canadian Football League offered me that opportunity, and that's why I went up there. And things worked out great. Did a lot of winning up there, but got a chance to come back to the NFL just because of my curiosity of people telling me I couldn't do it. I kept saying, I think I can, and I want to try it again. So I came back and tried it, and it worked out pretty well for me in the NFL as well. So my big thing was all about opportunity. Just give me a chance to show what I could do, and if I can't do it, then I'll move on and go do something else. But when you don't get that opportunity, you got to try and find one somewhere else.
I think a lot of people, you know, if given the two choices, if it's, you know, play wide receiver in the National Football League or running back in the National Football League, would choose that decision over playing quarterback in the CFL. What made you so adamant that you weren't going to switch positions, that you were going to play quarterback full-time?
First of all, I wasn't a great athlete. I was a good athlete for a quarterback. I didn't have blazing speed. I was like a 4.6 guy, and I just didn't think I could make the transition to another position as a professional, having never played that position before. You know how many kids that play wide receiver or play defensive back have been doing it their whole life and still don't make it in the National Football League? So I just didn't feel like I would make it at that position. I felt like I was a really good quarterback, like I said, at all different levels that I played it at. And I felt like I could play it in the NFL. So that's why I chose to play that position only, because I just thought my career would be over if I tried to switch.
Right now, we're talking to Warren Moon. He's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, the Canadian Hall of Fame, celebrating that in Super Bowl 57, it will be the first Super Bowl with two African-American quarterbacks. Catching up with Warren Moon. How much of being told no by the NFL really motivated you to have the success that you did have in Canada?
You know, it really didn't motivate me as much. I just went up there because that's just the way my nature had always been. I was always going to try and get better each and every year. And And that was what my goals were. Yeah, I did have a little bit of a chip on my shoulder, just showing people that I thought I could do certain things that they didn't think I could. But until I came back to the NFL, you still don't know if you can play NFL football. So that's what prompted me to come back to show that I could, or show myself that I could play in the league, and also show a lot of the doubters that didn't think I could play quarterback, I could play in the league as well.
Right now we're talking to Warren Moon here. Warren, did you have that moment of self-doubt? You know, you're being told by outsiders that, you know, they don't think you can play quarterback in the National Football League, and you're in this new country. You don't know anybody. It's cold. You want to go home in that situation. Did you have those moments of self-doubt and then wanting to quit?
I never wanted to quit once I went up there and started playing, but I had some doubts prior to before I went up there, just because I had a big decision to make. Because, you know, as a young kid, I wanted my goal was to play in the National Football League and to go through the draft and be drafted. And I thought I had done enough in my college career to at least get that chance. But when it didn't happen, and I didn't have the Canadian Football League opportunity at that time, as NFL teams were telling me that they weren't going to play me a quarterback, I really thought about giving up the game and just going back to school and going to law school and become a lawyer, because that was going to be my fallback if I didn't play any more football. But if the Canadian Football League opportunity wouldn't have come along, I probably would have gave up the game, just because I wasn't going to go do something that I didn't feel confident I could do. And I just would have been wasting my time and wasting the team's time that I went to.
You played 6 years in the CFL. What was it like to get the call? And it's not just like one team wanted you to play in the NFL. There was a bidding war for your services. What was it like to make the decision? What went through your mind when you made the decision to leave Canada and then join the NFL?
Yeah, my attorney at the time, Lee Steinberg, did a great job of orchestrating all those teams interested in me. And it was about seven teams at the time, and I went around and visited all of them. There was Tampa Bay, there was New Orleans, there was the New York Giants, there was the Raiders, there was the Seahawks, and of course the Houston Oilers. And I went around to all those cities to kind of let people know who I was, visit the organizations, had press conferences in those cities just to kind of get some more visibility. And it really was beneficial for me, and I got a good picture of what I really wanted to do and who I wanted to play for. And I ended up being the highest paid player in the league after that whole free agency period was over, because there was no free agency in football when I came back. And I was a free agent because nobody had drafted me when I came out in the draft. So I could go wherever I wanted. So it was a great situation to be in. And it was a fun period in my life to be able to travel around all those different organizations and have people, wanting your services after, you know, just 6 years before nobody thought I could even play the position. So I felt like it was just a very special time in my life, and I had a family at this time, and had to make the right decision on what was best for not only myself and my football career, but also my family.
Did you ever have that I made it moment? You know, you talk about what you had to go through, and you make the decision to do something that not a lot of college football players would have made, to go to Canada. You go to Canada and you have great success there. Did you ever have that moment when you get to Houston and then you become the highest paid player in the National Football League? Did you ever have yourself that moment, or allow yourself to have that, man, I really did it moment?
Yeah, I think when I signed my first contract, it was a lot of money. It was like $5 million or something like that. And that was a highlight that I had made it to the NFL. Now, I still had to go out there on the field and do it. That was going to be my next I made it moment. Once I felt like I could compete and excel at the NFL game. So my first game in the NFL was against the defending world champion LA Raiders in our first regular season game. We lost that game 21-14, but I threw two touchdown passes and got knocked around a bit in that game because we had a very young team. But after that game, I felt like, you know, I can compete with these guys, and we're only going to get better as a team as we start to, you know, build and put pieces around. But I felt like I belonged after that first game against the Raiders.
Warren, you mentioned some of the struggles that you had trying to get into the NFL. What do you think was the motivation behind it? Because, I mean, you were a really productive college football player. It's not like you didn't prove it at a major level. You go to Washington, you have success. I mean, you played in big-time games. You played in the Rose Bowl against Michigan. You played under a legendary head coach. What do you think was the motivation at that time?
Well, it was just a lot of stereotypes about African-Americans even playing the position. And unless they felt like you were just a surefire, can't-miss guy, you weren't gonna get drafted high in the NFL draft. And I don't know if people had a lot of questions about me. I heard so many different things about, because there was no combine at that time. Nobody was coming out to give me any individual workouts to, you know, to see me throw the football or anything like that. So a lot of it was just based off of what people felt about players playing that position. And there were a lot of stigmas about African-Americans playing the position. And could they be franchise builders? Could they be leaders? Could they be decision makers? Could they be the face of a franchise? All those different things, and that mentality was just there. It's something that I had to deal with. And I knew that when I decided to play that position as a young kid, because I saw that there wasn't a lot of African-American quarterbacks playing the position as I was growing up. But there were enough that gave me the motivation that maybe I could play that position one day in the NFL if I do all the right things. So that was kind of my driving force, was that, you know, Barnett Briscoe was in the league for a while. James Harris was very successful with the Rams as an African-American. Joe Gilliam had some success with the Pittsburgh Steelers. So I felt like I had enough role models there to show me that I could maybe one day play in the league. And that's what, you know, kept driving me towards it.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you that. You know, at the time, you know, when you hear somebody like Patrick Mahomes say, you know, the guys before me opened the door, I mean, he's really talking about players for you, where if you're a player, you know, during your time, you played college football in the 70s, you know, I'm thinking, like, who did you look up to? Who were your role models? Who were the guys that showed you that you could do this? You know, it was a lot different in the 90s and the 2000s to show the Michael Vicks and those players that they could do it. You just didn't have a whole lot of options whenever you were playing college football.
No, I didn't. And that was one of the reasons why, when I became successful, I wanted to reach back and talk to a lot of the younger guys who were coming up, just so they had a sounding board to talk to about my experiences and how I could help them moving forward with some of the things they were going to have to deal with. Even though a lot of those guys were becoming high round draft picks, like the Donovan McNabbs and the Dante Culpeppers and Michael Vicks and guys like that. These were first round draft picks, but they were still dealing with some of the same stuff that I dealt with, only they were getting, you know, opportunities to play the position. I, on the other hand, was not getting that opportunity. And so I had to go through that part of it. And then once I got in the league, still deal with some of the things that I had to deal with.
How proud are you that we are at this moment where you mentioned that you want to get to the point where this isn't a story, you know, and you look at the league and it's changed. I mean, there's 8 or 9 African-American quarterbacks in the league. You know, it's becoming a lot more normal, so to speak. How proud are you in the evolution of the position and knowing that you're one of the people that helped to get to this point?
Yeah, you know, I'm very proud, because in 1984, when I did come back to the league, I was the only starting black quarterback in the league, and the only other black quarterback in the league was our third quarterback, a guy by the name of Brian Ransom from the Tennessee State. So eventually, you know, Doug Williams came back from the USFL, and Vince Evans came back into the league. Randall Cunningham was drafted, I think, a year later. And then, you know, we started on from there. But, you know, that was a very lonely year, because, again, you had nobody that you could talk about your experiences with, because there was nobody there experiencing it with you. But I also knew there was a great responsibility on me, that I had to play well, not only for my team and my organization and fans, but, you know, for other black quarterbacks that wanted to get a chance to play the game. People were looking to see how successful I was going to be. And it was the same thing for Doug Williams. It was the same thing for Randall. And, you know, Doug winning the Super Bowl was huge in 1988, because that showed that we could get to the pinnacle of the game, where a lot of people doubted us to be able to do something like that. And then my teams were always in the playoffs, so we were always very competitive. So we did enough to show people that these guys deserved a chance, the younger generation coming up. And I'm very, very proud that I played a small part in that, because now you see the league flourishing with African-American quarterbacks. They're being drafted high. They're some of the highest paid players in the league. They're highly endorsed. All those different things that we always hoped for back in the day, is happening now, and I'm really proud that I played a part in that.
That is Warren Moon joining us on the show today, and quite frankly, he is one of the most productive quarterbacks we have ever seen. He was the Offensive Player of the Year in 1990. He's been an All-Pro, a 9-time Pro Bowler, led the NFL in passing yards multiple times. He finds himself in the Canadian Football Hall of Fame and also the Pro Football Hall of Fame. This is the first Super Bowl with two African-American quarterbacks going up against one another. Warren, it was an honor to hear your stories and talk about your time to getting to where you are. We appreciate you. Thanks a lot.
Hey, thanks for having me on, and thanks for bringing some light to this very, very important subject.
That's Warren Moon joining us on the show. He's brought to you by AG Power, John Deere. AG Power, experience all that John Deere has to offer at AG Power, and also pop. Get any medium two-topping pizza for just $6.99 in-store or at PapaMurphys.com. It is very rewarding to see the progress that I feel has been made at the quarterback position. I don't think that this is going to be a story for too much longer. I've seen some text over the course of the day. Why are you talking about, why does this matter? Doug Williams said that he cried when it happened. We have seen four teams in the last 10 years who have just started their first black quarterback. This is still a relatively new thing, I would say, where I do think that it has evolved to the point where I just think this is going to be normal moving forward. I mean, there were 11 black starting quarterbacks to start last season. Now, injuries happened over the course of the year, but there were 11 to start the year. We've seen black quarterbacks be the first overall pick. I think we're going to see three. I think the first three quarterbacks potentially taken in the next NFL draft are going to be black. So I don't think that this conversation is going to be had for too much longer, but we always talk about progress and how we've made it, but we never want to tell the journey of how we got to the point where the progress has happened. Like, these are the stories from people like Doug Williams, from people like Warren Moon, that got it to the point now where it's no longer a big deal, and I don't think that it's going to be a story for too much longer. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City as we continue to get you ready for Super Bowl 57 between the Chiefs and the Philadelphia Eagles. I'll go through the four storylines that I'm most interested in as we really dive into it over the course of the weekend. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is back. What does that mean for the Chiefs? We'll discuss it. Keep it right here. It's The Drive on 610 Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.